This is a Pinball News production.
Okay, are we ready?
We're ready.
We're ready. First of all, I want to thank everybody with the festival for inviting me down here and a chance to share my stories and adventures in pinball with you, because it really was just that. And it's a long ways down here, so before I came down, I checked with everybody else that I knew that had been down here. I called them all, and I couldn't find anything bad about you. So that's why I'm here. And you didn't let me down except for the weather. But I'm kind of used to it. Can you go to the next one, please? You know, when I first started researching, you know, going through my archives for this presentation, and I never throw anything away. I have almost every scrap of paper, every rough sketch, everything, you know. So I was in the No Good Gophers folder, and I came upon this drawing here, and it was an early rough sketch. Pat Lawler asked me to do a golf cart design. And I looked at that thing, and I thought, you know, I get paid for doing the same exact thing that nearly got me kicked out of school over and over again. You know, math, English, I'd be drawing cars with guns on them and rockets and stuff, you know. And here I was doing this again, you know, and it really has been fun. But I'm a little bit different than some of the other guests, or some of the other artists, I should say, because I was never an employee of a pinball company. A lot of people don't know that, but I was always freelancer or contract worker. The closest I got was a contract worker. And it was a really sweet deal for about 6 years in the 90s. But prior to that, I had a great freelance career, and it started right out of art school. I got the dream job, and it really was a dream job for a young art student, graduate that is. You can go to the next one. This is in it, but it kind of a lead into it. It was illustrating album covers. I worked for Album Graphics on Dearborn Street, Chicago. We did all of Mercury Records albums. And that included, I think it was, there was a European company too, Phonogram or something like that. We did theirs. We did a lot of country. It was mostly rock and roll, country, and some classical music, you know. But if you think about it, album covers, you know, they're a lot like a back glass. And it was really good training for me for later on. It would come in handy. Plus it got to work. Some outrageous people, which also helped me later on when I had to work with Python. Python Angela from Transylvania and all the places, you know. But it was a lot of fun, and I thought I'd mention I thought I had some of the album covers. I worked with Jerry Lee Lewis, Bachman Turner Overdrive, Rod Stewart, and when Rod Stewart came into town, he was like our big guy, you know. And, well, I can't tell you all the stories, because I just can't. But I do remember one of the highlights was I was 22 years old at the International Amphitheater, art directing a photo session at a concert. And it was pretty crazy. I loved working with Jerry Lee Lewis. Joe Tex, another person. As a kid, you know, listening to Joe Tex on the radio, I never dreamed I'd be doing an album cover of his. Doug Sound from Texas, Sir Douglas Quintet, the Statler Brothers, who I really liked a lot, and Casey and the Sunshine Band, some of the album covers. My boss at AGI was good friends with all the guys over at Playboy. Playboy magazine was published in Chicago, and it was maybe like five blocks away. So they hooked me up doing freelance work for Playboy, and I did a lot of the story illustration, if anybody ever looked at the stories. But I was illustrating stories for Ray Bradbury and things like that. It was a real honor, and once an artist was in Playboy, it opened doors from a lot of other places. So that in turn led to me having a rep, which is like an agent in Chicago, and moving into advertising. And really, I was following the money trail, you know, like any young businessman artist, you know. Those two words don't really go together, but that's what I was trying to do. And I really had made it. I found myself about 1985, you know, I'd been married a while, had a couple kids, five dogs, you know, a cat. Living in the countryside, working out of my home studios, it was really my dream and kind of been achieved there. And I didn't know, but I was about to meet four people that would really turn my world upside down and shake things up. And you've probably heard of some of them. Fred Bezark, does anybody in the room know Fred or heard of him? And I'll talk about him in a minute. Ken Fidesna, who I think president of Williams, I think that was his title. Python Angelo, and of course, Pat Lawler. And It all started one evening. I can remember it was after dinner. I was just relaxing. You know, Fred Bezart calls. And I knew him because he had worked for a toy company. And kind of like a business agent or something like that for, I don't know if it was Evel Knievel or what, but he was like an entrepreneur, rock entrepreneur type guy. And he said, John, I have something that might help you, you know. And he knew me as a guy who could, like, do a job on time and do it well and, like a machine, you know, just you get the job, you do it, you deliver it Friday, no matter what, you know, you work all night, whatever. And people appreciate that. And so Williams needed somebody like that. They were in a situation where they had games on the assembly line and the artwork wasn't ready yet. So I didn't know any of this was going on, but I did not want to get involved in pinball. I had a bad experience in the 70s. And so the minute I heard the word pinball, I thought, oh no, how am I going to get out of this? You know, because I respected Fred. I had to be nice. And it's not a good thing to say in a room like this that you didn't want to get into pinball, but I really did. And it was only because of Fred that I went to that meeting with Kenneth Desert. You can just roll through a couple of these freelance things. Actually, you can roll through all of them slowly until you get to that Williams slide. Just examples of some of the stuff I was working on. So anyway, I find myself at Williams, and I don't know how many of you have been to the old Williams building, anybody? Okay, do you remember, I was walking down the hallway to Ken's office, I didn't know him yet, and the first thing I see on the left is a back glass by Python, big guns, you know. Like, it hit me hard, you know, I looked at it, man, it was really strong art in your face, and I thought, wow, that's really cool. Went a little bit further, you know, and there was High Speed, you know, F-14 by Doug Watson, maybe just a random playfield or two sitting there in the playfields. I looked at them, and they scared the heck out of me, you know, just all the artwork on there. I thought, I want nothing to do with the playfield, you know. Anyway, met with Ken, and you're doing cool. Okay, hold right there. He's having his lunch. Anyway, met with Ken, and he got done making his pitch, and really I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to get out of here? What's my excuse, you know? And he said, and I already told him I want nothing to do with cabinet, you know, plastics, clay field, you know, but the back glass could be cool, and he asked me to throw a number out, and I did. And he looked me in the eye, and he said, John, that's not enough. And that was, those are the magic words for me that really got me to stick around, because I was still following the money trail. I was not addicted yet, you know. So within minutes, I'm back in Python Angelo's office, and I only knew the name Python for like an hour, you know. And I met him, and he hasn't been down here, has he? Has he talked to you guys? Because he's an outrageous, hyperactive, like creative dynamo. And I'd seen his artwork on the wall, and I knew he was good, but a lot of illustrators can just, through time and tenacity, they can render something really nice. But what really hit me about Python was his drawing around his office. His drawing was just beautiful, natural, flowing drawing that I spotted immediately. And it looked like kind of like a Michelangelo type, you know, that's kind of exaggerating, but I've only known like a half dozen people that could really, you know, do that, the drawings was all off their fingertips. So he kind of had me, and I kind of, his character was a little bit off-putting to me at first, you know, until I got to know him, but worked okay with him. And the first game pitched to me was Jokers, and there we go. And I decided to just have fun with it, you know. To me, I just told myself, okay, I'm doing like a King Crimson, Court of the Crimson King album cover, you know. That's how I saw it. And brought the final artwork in on time, and everybody liked it. I think Python was really expecting me to fail, and he liked the artwork. He just had two comments, and I ignored him completely. He said, I want you to put outlines around everything, like black outlines around everything. And he said, the queen, I want her to have protruding nipples. And maybe when I worked over at Playboy, I would do that, but now I'm like a scoutmaster. I got, you know, nieces and nephews and kids at my house. There's no way I'm doing that, you know. So I just brought the artwork. I took it home, and I touched a few other things and brought it back. And by the way, Ken Fidesna, I had his confidence. He told me, you do what you want to do. So I did, and that's the way it went. I for sure thought when I saw the game printed, Python would have outlined everything and painted the nipples in, but he never, he didn't touch it. So that's a good story about Python that I like. Meanwhile, you can switch to the next one. I put a couple of slides together because I could feel something happening to me in my life. And I was like on this interstate, this advertising illustrator interstate, you know, now I'm off on this little detour, you know, and is it going to be a dead end or what, you know? But this is really true of like what my life was like before and after pinball. And, you know, things like, I did a Teletubbies book, you know, and that actually I did after pinball, but it's a good comparison. And then, you know, I don't have to explain that, you know. Next slide. I was a Kool-Aid man guy for years and did all those little flavors on the packets, you know. And, you know, compared to pinball, it was nice because one flavor, you know, you paint it in like an afternoon and you got a check for like $2,000, you know. So it was easy money, you know. It's like, okay, what are you going to do, you know. But it's the Kool-Aid man. It gets just boring. On the other hand, you got, you know, Jackpot, that's right, which I had a lot of fun with. We'll go into that later. Okay, next slide. Same thing here, you know, working with Jay Walter Thompson and those guys. You go in there to like a meeting on Marlboro or something, you know, and everybody's in suits, and it's like that show on, what is it, TNT or whatever. I don't watch it because it's just too real to me. The one about the old advertising agencies. And Python, really, that was he was a shock to me. Go ahead, next one. This particular one was true of album covers too, so I was used to it. We had like a guy at Mercury Records where I'd go in, we'd always do outrageous type, you know, and I'd go in there and show the album cover artwork, and he's like sitting behind his desk in a suit, you know, with a tie and everything, and I'm like in dyed blue jeans or something, you know, back in the early 70s. And he'd get out a newspaper ad, like it would be like a Fair and Young sketch or something, you know. He'd get out a newspaper, open it up, and you'd see like a Sears ad or Montgomery Ward. See that? Sears! Right across the top. You know, that's what I want. Fair and Young. You know? But it was, you know, kind of a similar situation. Next. And actually, I had known Mad Dog Christensen. I just knew him as Dave Christensen. My old art school roommate was our Worship Valley. And he actually got me in the door to work on Old Chicago years before this, which is another story that later on I'll talk about it if you want. Okay, next. Police force. And I don't have a good image of that. If anybody has a good image of police force, I would appreciate it because they're hard to shoot the back glass. That's all I have. I don't have the artwork. Talk to me later on. Anyway, I was learning something from Python. I mean, the guy, he is an icon, and he kind of established a whole look for pinball. He and Dave Christensen, he's from Modern Pinball. I look at those guys, and things were starting to sink in on me, you know, like bold color, big lines, and it was a slow process for me. But I had fun with that one. I got to watch my timer so we cover stuff. Let's see. Then about that time, I'd done two back glasses, and Ken Fidesna called me in, and he said, you know, I think you're about ready to do a whole game. And I was kind of thinking the same thing, but I was nervous about it. And he said, I got a designer that wants to work with you. And his name is Pat Lawler. And I heard Pat's name, but it was just like, you know, I didn't remember who he was or put him in a face or anything. He'd already done Bonsai Run and what was the other game? It was Earthquaker, right? Earthshaker?
Earthshaker.
Right. But I didn't know that. So I agreed to the meeting. I was ready, you know. And to make a long story short, Pat and I just hit it off right off the bat, and he lived out near me. We didn't live in Chicago. He lived even further out than me. I went 50 miles out, and back then it really was in the boonies, and I liked it like that. And he was like another half hour beyond me. So for him to drive into work, it was like, it could be 2 hours some days, you know? So we had that in common, and we just liked a lot of similar things. So I just remember laughing all the time, you know? And so it became fun, and he was, I gotta stick to my notes here, so otherwise I'll get way too many. One good thing about him was he was very patient with me, kind of mentored me through that first game. You can go on, I'm sorry. Sure. Whirlwind was, that was the game, the very first game. And the back glass, no problem for me. I was, like I said, I was, again, thinking, by now I'm thinking pinball, but still it's a lot similar to the record covers. But having fun, you know, just having a blast doing it. I modeled for the guy in the van. My kids did a lot of other stuff and came up with that cloud god-like weather god type character. another thing was happening where it's like I had this unleashed feeling, you know, and I'm used to being told what to do, you know, at least in advertising, or if you're, you get an assignment, someone's roughed it in, you know, and you really have to stay within the lines with pinball. There was none of that. You know, I'd meet with Pat, and it was just the discussion between us, you know, like he had the fan on the game, and he had the spinning discs on the play field. And it was all about, you know, what are you going to come up with? You know, he thought it could be a weatherman theme, you know, or you know, we both talked about this crazy guy who just chases storms. You know, there was no Storm Chasers TV show back then. So that's what I kind of came up with. I'm still thinking like that high school kid, you know, in math class, you know. I'm going to draw a really cool van. I'm going to put everything on it I can possibly put on there, you know. And he's chased that many storms. Let's see if that works. Actually, I'm talking about this one, so I don't need a laser pointer anymore. Go ahead, next one. A sketch for that particular game. This is what I would have brought in to show Pat for approval. I always do a loose sketch, then I fax it to Pat's house, then a tight sketch. I don't want any surprises, because once you do that final painting, back then, this is pre-digital. This is airbrushed acrylic. Gouache, and kind of like a multimedia mix of artwork, and it's hard to change. Next slide. This is the part I was terrified of, is the playfield. And I'm not kidding you. Later on, you'll see some mechanical drawings of playfields, and to this day, I still get a migraine when I look at them. You know, that first day I'm working on them. When I get a mechanical drawing, I just simplify it as much as possible. But I kept it very simple, and Pat had told me his philosophy of playfield artwork, and I adhere to that to this day. And it's the artwork should draw the player into the game, and the artwork should lead the player to a shot. Pat thought that if there was no type on a game, just looking at it, it should tell you where to shoot. That and when the insert's late. And I'm a very poor pinball player, so when I walk up to a game, that's what I do. I look at the art and I look at what inserts are flashing, and that's where I shoot. So, you know, these stripes are to lead you into the game. I'm kind of leading you into the shots up there, those little arrows, you know. There's insert arrows, but I would exaggerate them. When you have a flipper coming out diagonally, it really throws the flow of the game off, but you have no choice but to put a lane there so the player realizes he's got to shoot. He's got to shoot in that direction. So it's just kind of like a necessary evil for the artist that you have to deal with. Okay, next one. Next game, Radical. And this was kind of a guilty pleasure for me because as a kid, I was like the only kid in Dover, Ohio that like ordered his skateboard from Hawaii. And I have the scars on my knees to prove it. So I got to do a game. Now skateboarding had changed, you know, but it was a lot of fun. I did the whole game again, not only back class, but playfield, everything. The designer was Dan Langloy, who was living in California at the time. And by the way, the late Dan Langloy, because he passed away a few years after this game, unfortunately. But I just decided to make it fun. I'm trying to point out some individual things here, but everything in here, I love doing stuff like the tennis shoes, the beat up plywood, the kids over here, you know. Even the guy on the board. This board here, I did about 5 pieces of artwork for the bottom of that board before I settled on one that was good and pinball. Some of them were too soft, too gentle, you know. We needed something aggressive because it was pinball, really, you know. The girl, just everything in there, just, you know, personal, fun stuff. And hopefully everybody would approve. Next slide, please. Okay, this is a good demonstration of leading into the game. And Dan Langley prepared this whitewood with these stripes on here. And game designers often will get in there with a magic marker and just draw lanes and stuff for, you know, who's ever testing the game, whatever. But I used them, and as far as I'm concerned, this playfield, I love doing it. And if I look at just the artwork without the ramps or any inserts, I still love the artwork. But I failed on this playfield, and I'd done so long whirlwind, and I thought it was good, but when it was all set up, you know, and everybody was testing it for the first time, and people were kind of, oh, that's great, you know, and other people were kind of quiet. And suddenly Steve Kordek's in the back of the room, and I hear him say, and I didn't know who Steve was, but he's like, now I kneel to him, you know. But he said, looks busy to me. And I go, who's that guy, you know? But he was really right. It's, look at that play field, I mean. Let me make sure I get that. You know, I started leading you in here, okay, you know, but then I have some artwork over here, which totally interrupts the flow of the game.
I think if the upper playfield was a different color, or just used a different palette up there, it would work. So I wish I could have done that one over. I love other things I did in there. I tried to really pick up on the skateboarding look and everything. Next slide, please. Now we're getting somewhere. I'm really in the groove, and I truly am addicted now. We're to the point where when a game finished, about a week, I'd be exhausted, first of all, because it was 6 months of work, but after game finished, about a week later, I'd start kind of like my kid had run away or something. I had to find him, you know. I'd call down there, you got another game, you know. Oh, Pat, it was no wondering, you know, because Pat was always priming the pump, always getting people ready. It was one smart thing he did, and I'll talk more about that later. By the way, this is taken from the assembly ground, the factory assembly line for a game. I love going out there. Next slide, please. So the first meeting with Pat, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in other ones, but we would just talk, you know, and I remember I was going up to print the back glass on Radical. I had to drive up to Wisconsin. And in the car up there, I would just do some blue sky thinking, you know. And again, we had an idea. I had this idea of this talking head on the playfield. It just knocked me dead, you know. Nobody had ever done that, at least I don't think so. And Larry DeMar said he could make a talk, you know, which I thought, man, I don't believe you can do this. And John Crutch was going to do the engineering and everything, you know. So Pat had a couple of ideas, and I pitched about five different scenarios. One of them, which I still love to talk about, didn't make the cut. But Rudy was really kind of demented, and the back glass was a Carney guy driving down the highway, and the truck, you know, that would eventually unfold on the ride. And underneath the trailer part of the truck, there were bars with these, you know, people that had gone to the funhouse and never got out. Walked in and never left. This is kind of close to the guts of the back glass that he went along with. And Rudy, we didn't have a name for Rudy yet. He was just kind of like the dummy Carnival Barker. And he was a little bit demented, you know, so there was some uncertainty about what Rudy did. And we wanted to keep that guessing. Next slide. By the way, over here on the left, there's always a hit list or a buzz list that I would prepare and other people would chip in. And it's just to get you thinking. You know, anything you think of, you write down. And it can become like four pages of things. So if you're stymied, there's a lot of artwork on a pinball machine. So, you know, you've done the back glass, you've done the cabin, you know, you get down to doing the cows, you know, what can you do new? So you rely on that to just get you thinking. Next slide, please. These were some ideas, but we had to get a legal clearance on the game. And I think we started out with Crazy House, and we couldn't get that. We were surprised to get Funhouse. I think it was owned by someone else owned it, but not for a coin-op game. So we ended up going with the Funhouse, and these are those early pictures. Next slide. This is the tight sketch for Funhouse. And when I first brought it in, this area down here was not finished, just up on top. And but I told Pat I wanted to add a lot of people down here, which I later, he said, yeah, do that, you know. Can you do that by tomorrow? You know? Well, no, because I got a photo of models and everything, you know. But Pat loved this stuff. When he saw this, like, alive, the wild boy, raised by suburban coyotes, you know. That is so cool. Keep putting stuff like that in, you know. It really encouraged me. Next slide, please. This is the final artwork, and now you can see the characters down here. And I don't know if any of you are fans of American Illustration, but I was like an NC Wyatt Howard Pyle guy, and they use this warm, cool light thing all the time. So I wanted warm light back here, and really I intended for this to all be painted in blues and such, but it was just getting too unpinball-like, so I didn't have the guts to do what I should have done, but I wish it was more blues down here, because if you look at it, it can't be busy, but it's pinball. It's got to be busy. Next slide, please. I always do this too. I always do photo reference for the characters. And who's the cheapest photo reference? Your kids, you know, your wife, me, you know. So everybody in my family knows how to use a camera. And they know about lenses, wide angle lenses, and they learned with 35 millimeter. Even Charlie, Charlie was, I don't know, 5 then or something, you know? And I was thinking, I gotta draw a dummy, you know? But yeah, what can I do for a dummy? And of course, the light bulb. My kid, he's a... And he's a big ham anyway. You can see, I didn't have to force any of this stuff. He's just like, you know, all over the place. You know, a real showman.
So Charlie, there's Rudy, and then, you know, we did other things. He even was a girl for one. My wife, Jenny, became the girl in the popcorn, which you already saw. Andy, on the right there, he was a kid with coins. He wasn't around as much because he was getting older, and so that's why he wasn't in as much stuff. Okay, next one, please. It's just some outtakes. I'd always go down there, because I worked out of my home, I'd photograph the whitewood. I'd shoot a lot of shots of it from different angles, and I'd bring that home, and I'd use that to refer to. That's the Rudy hardware before. That's what I looked at when I went in there. Actually, that wasn't on the first whitewoods. This is what the model maker made. Next slide, because let's go to the next slide for a second. I guess I don't have, okay, back up. Thanks for being so patient. Doing this character was really fun. I'd never done anything like that, so I was given a mechanical drawing of that, and Pat told me to rent the movie Magic and watch it. And that influenced me a lot. Plus, he made an excuse to go out and buy a toy and deduct it, so I bought a Charlie McCarthy mannequin. And all that stuff influenced me, plus my kid. Plus, just the restrictions of drawing in that box, you know. Funny little inside story. Python's office was like two doors down from Pat. It was Pat, this is the way I remember it anyway, it could be wrong. Pat, Mary DeMar, and Python. And it kept changing. People would swap offices out. But Python would call me in, because I'm like a Python guy. There's factions of the company, different teams. There are different teams of games, you know. And Python would pull me one way, you know, and then Pat would pull me the other way. And Python called me into his office one day when I was working on this game, and he said, "You need to get off this game. That Mahler guy, you know, it's crazy. You know, no one will put money in a game that insults you. You know, I thought, but it's really fun, you know." And Python was wrong about that. Okay, next slide. He's not wrong about a lot of stuff, but I can remind him of that someday. I loved going out in the factory. I worked in factories when I was going to art school, and a lot of people hated that stuff. But I worked with my brothers, and we had a great time. So I loved walking through the Williams factory. I always walked through the middle of it. You can walk around it. I'd walk through the assembly line and look at stuff. Even got kicked out of there once because I had my kid on my shoulders. Next slide, please. Gilligan's Island. And just a few notes on this. Ward Pemberton was the designer. It had been a Dan Langway game, but Dan had passed away. And he was going to call it the Brain. The island is going to be a brain, a sci-fi theme, I guess. I still remember the meeting. I went down there with Ward, and a lot of Williams people were in there. And Steve Kordak said, "I think we ought to make it Space Station, you know, like a reprise of the Space Station theme." And obviously, we didn't do it. We got the license, Gilligan's Island, probably Roger Sharp. I wasn't really tuned into the company that much. I didn't really understand the dynamics of how things worked. But I think it was a good plan. I loved the theme because I sat around and watched a lot of Gilligan's Island when I was young. The cool thing, let's just go through these slides. By the way, that last one, I'm sorry, can you go back, Shannon? I'd always do like a couple of thumbnails, you know, and this really led to the backlash. And I forgot to mention that Greg Ferraris came on board back when I was working on Whirlwind. And he was an art director and a great person to bounce things off of. So I would always go in there and get feedback from Greg. Let's see. I wanted to make sure I missed something with Funhouse. I just wanted to back up about the whole team thing at Williams. When I'd go in to meet with Pat, he'd call in whoever was on that team. It'd be Larry DeMar, programmer, you know, but kind of a co-designer. John Crutch, who was the mechanical engineer who had designed Rudy and any toys on the game. Chris Branner, who did great sounds, you know, just a heck of a musician. And we'd always go out to the same place. We'd go out to Dapper Dan's. Anybody been to Dapper Dan's here? It's on California, you know, just a few blocks from Williams. At least it was there. I don't know if it still is, in a little strip mall. But we'd all sit there and brainstorm. I'd bring my notes, you know. And it was a great, you know, snapshot in time. I think back on that, I drive by there. My kid used to live there. And it brings back really fond memories of, like, about six or seven or maybe 10 of us sitting there just brainstorming and shooting ideas back and forth. And Chris Granner, the sound guy, he'd be like singing and doing sound effects of the waitresses. They knew us after a couple times, you know. And we'd get there like about, you know, noon, and we'd leave about 3. And no one else would be there, you know. And, it was a lot of fun. I came away from those meetings like just wired, you know, really helped up. And you, I think the big thing about it was in an advertising artwork, you did the job, you got paid, you know. And then you didn't know if you'd ever hear from anybody. It was like, so long, bye-bye, you know. But with this, you know, there's a team, and you're working with each other over and over again, and people are really working hard. You know, people would camp out there for like a week at a time, you know, when you were coming into the end of a game. And I didn't want to let the team down. You know, nobody wanted to let the other guy down. So you feed off everybody else's creativity. You know, you feed off what Crutch was doing with his toys and stuff. You feed off Larry DeMar where he makes the programming work or whatever. Of course, Pat, you know, he was the real source of inspiration, really the father of these games. Let's see, next slide. I have to keep moving. Time is a factor. Just a few pointers or a few things about Gilligan's Island. We couldn't get Ginger. We could not get Ginger, so I just made her up. I opened a magazine and put a figure out of there, and you have to change her or you'll get sued. Greg Ferris had input into some of these characters back there, but it really kind of came together. I like to do things that interact in a game. I still do it with slot machine design when I do artwork. Instead of just having a guy doing one thing, you try to tie everything, at least I try to tie things together, like Mary Ann's providing the power, you know, the professor's watching what's going on, you know, Ginger's bringing fuel or whatever, you know. So it just makes it all more fun. Next slide, please. Final artwork. Greg Ferris came up with the idea of lava seltzer for that game. Which, you know, I haven't played it in a long time, so I don't even remember the game, but that was one of Greg's ideas. And by the way, Bob Denver, I can't think of anything dramatic to say about the play field, but you can see I'm doing that, staying true to that whole thing of leading the player in, you know, as much as possible. Even the little palm trees, look where they're pointing, you know. They're leading the player's eye into the game. We always try to keep this area down here darker color. That was a Pat thing. Other people didn't do it. They'd use yellow down here. But Pat, listen, you'd get feedback from operators. You know, they'd say it's really hard to keep the game clean, you know, down here. You know, could you do something about that? Well, we did everything we could. But Pat, you know, I could not get away with light colors. This is where Pemberton, so if it was a Pat game, you'd probably want a darker background down here. Next slide, please. A couple of cabin concepts, rough things. I think we went with the one similar to the one on the right. Next slide, please. Bob Denver, the cool thing that I remember about this was Bob Denver came to Chicago to do the speech for the game. And I went down, someone called me and said, he's going to be here, come on down, you know. So I got his autographs. I had some friends that had a dog named Gilligan, you know, so they signed the dog Gilligan. He did it, you know. He was a really nice guy. And did the speech, and then we all went out to lunch together, and we drove in 2 cars. We went over on Irving Park Road. There's a place called Chicago Joe's. It's still there, and I still drive by that place, too. But we parked about a block away, and we had a walk down Irving Park, and Gilligan's, he wore his red shirt and his hat. He's like 70 years old now, but I'm just guessing his age. But so we're walking down, and a CTA bus pulled up at a red light right there, and it was summertime. And the windows were open. And, you know, there's people dressed all kinds of ways in Chicago, you know, but immediately they recognized it was Gilligan. And they started yelling out the bus, Gilligan, look, it's Gilligan, you know, not Bob Denver, it's Gilligan. And he's waving, you know, and he went over to the bus and he shook everybody's hand, you know. Then we went in the restaurant and, man, they about shut down. Because you know, everybody had to come over and shake hands and get autographs. He was a really great guy. Next slide, please. 2 games of note, again, Python, working with Python on the machine. I think I was talking to Jim Shelbert the other day about, he said he liked the face on that, and I drew a much cuter face for the girl, but Python, he redrew it for me. And so that's his face, but he basically had this whole thing planned as how the figure would be lying in there. I did a lot of customizing stuff myself down here, but it's his design. Next, hold on. for hurricane, I got called in because kind of about, I don't know if you know this or you heard this before, but python kind of went away for like a couple months and no one could find them. We had this whole thing of a factory time, you know, so that certain games would roll out on the assembly line, and here's this game ready to go, and there's no backlash. I can't remember what else it was. I think I just did the backlash for this particular game. Python had already done everything else, or other people were working on it. So Ken Fidesna called me in, or just called me and said, you know, can you do Hurricane? Or someone else called me first, and I said, no, I'm not gonna step on Python's toes. It would like be crossing boundaries. And finally, Ken called me and said, we need you to do this. And I said, well, I'll do it if it's an emergency. He said, it's an emergency. So I did it, and I had a lot of fun with it. As, I mean, that's the key, a lot of fun. I put the nuts in there that wanted to kick me out of school. I originally had one of them barfing in the bag, but I screwed it up a little, just in case. Kind of payback, you know? And I drew this much sweeter, but then I reminded myself, this is a Python game. It's got to be fast. Okay, next slide. Okay, Adam's Family. And a couple of things about, again, working with Pat. Maybe when I was working on those other games, you know, he'd constantly be working me. He'd be working everybody, you know, just getting people hyped up for the next game so you were ready. And he'd call me into his office. He'd go, when you're done, come with me, you know. And I'd go in his office. He'd always close the door. And then he'd say something like, what do you think about the Addams Family? You know, they're making a movie, you know, and Roger says we might be able to get it, you know. And it was always a great idea. They just get better, you know. And I was really on board with it, you know. It just sounded great. And he asked me to, we were going to pitch a backglass where there were animations going on in the windows, and maybe actually some physical animations back there. But it didn't last long because of the budget, so that's what this foam core mock-up is. Next slide, please. So this is what we ended up with. It's a sketch for the backglass that everybody approved of. It all had to be sent out to, I think this was Paramount, as I recall. So everything was sent out there for approval. It was my first game that was a big, like, film. You know, I've done TV shows and things, but this was the first film that had to be approved by, like, all these characters had rights of refusal on their likeness. So the only one I had problems with was Angelica Houston. Can you go to the next one, please? I don't have this is a color comp, like a marker color pencil comp. I don't have the final artwork. But anyway, she wanted her hips thinner, which is understandable, you know, so I trimmed them down twice. And when came time for the final artwork, she was the only one with a problem. And again, I think it was a hip thing, you know, and something with her hair, and I fixed it and sent it out there. And it came back, and she didn't like it, you know, and there were a few comments about her nose and stuff and her mouth. So I fixed those, and I got a call from Ken. And when Ken, usually I didn't get calls from Ken. I really didn't. I was just, it comes up now because I'm talking about the dramatic moments, you know. But usually it would be me working directly with Pat or Greg Ferris. So when Ken calls, I really, like, you know, came to attention. And he says, Yelsey, you know, this backlash, you know, we're ready to do this game. You know, the premiere is this weekend, and we got a couple of guys going out there. And we're ready to build this game, and your backlash is not approved. He said, I want you to go out there with them, and I don't want you to come back until it's approved. And I'm like, you mean the premiere? He says, well, yeah, but you're going out there to fix it, you know. And it's like, okay, throw me in that briar patch, you know. So I got a free trip to L.A. and stayed at the Beverly Wilshire, I think. And I'd already repaired the artwork when I got there, but I had to bring my studio with me. I mean, it was an airbrush guy, so I had to bring compressed air and all my paints and everything. I was ready to really do major surgery on this thing. And they took our people, took it to her people, and her only comment was to thin her nostril down. And this is the color comp, so that's kind of the unapproved version. But the final artwork that you see on the game was the repaired one. So really, I got the smallest brush I had and just put, like, and that was it, and she approved it. And the rest of the time was just getting a tour of Paramount. We got to run the Star Trek set and went to the premiere. It was a real hoot. But I can thank Angelica Houston for that great time out there. I remember going to the Santa Monica Pier with Pat Lawler and Roger Sharp, you know, and I just play pinball horrible. I have bad reflexes or something. And so we're playing pinball out there with those guys, the three of us. And it's like they play, you know, and they play for like 10 minutes on one ball, you know. And then I'd go up there and like drain, you know, and then Pat would get up there, you know, bang, bang, bang. We'd be playing forever. It was really embarrassing. Kind of like being naked in school or something.
I've got to make sure I don't lose track of this stuff.
Okay, next slide, please. These are just white woods that when I'd go into for those first meetings, this is what I'd see. Sometimes it wouldn't have any, usually it would have nothing on it. It would just be the wood itself. None of these, nothing would be on it. No jet bumpers, a lot of times no inserts. You know, people would write all over it. They'd go in there and route out an insert or a move insert. And you can see these inserts have been moved over here. That would become the mansion ultimately of Adam's family. I don't remember enough about it to make any other comments. It's pretty cool to go back and look at it again and compare how things have changed from one game to the next. Inserts moved all the time. You can see these two arrows here. Now they're in this lane. There may have been art to call out. Bad shot right there. Or whatever. Anyway, go to the next one. I don't know enough about this to talk about it. I don't remember. This is a color comp. And I should talk about, I just don't do these games by myself. I have support. Kevin O'Connor, who's a great pinball artist in his own right, does almost all the inking for my games. So he would ink all this artwork on. I give him a very tight pencil. You've seen some of them. There was very little question of what to do. He'd ink them. And then Margaret Hudson, who's been down here, who's a great person to work with, and I think she's cut the screens for every one of my games except one. But back in the Williams days, these screens were cut by hand. Some of the color comps we'll look at later, you'll see on the side, the color choices would be like 11 or 12, 14 colors. And she always made fun of me because I use more colors than anybody else, but I just wasn't thrifty about that. It got more expensive, so it affected the cost of the game. She would help a lot because I would color things, and then we had to figure out how to screen them. This is old-fashioned silk screen. And I got to speed it up. Won't talk any more about that. Next topic, or next slide. This is a rejected back box. We went with Pat had the idea of playing with the pinball, which is a great idea. Just some sketching I did at the very beginning. I sign everything so my kids can sell and make money when I'm dead. The next one. This is the Whitewater top box device. Greg Ferris's idea and his baby, really. It was a great addition to that game. Next slide, please. Okay, I forgot to mention we're on a Whitewater now, which means Dennis Nordman. Just like Pat, I was friends with Dennis long before I ever did a game. I was just drawn to his office. We were both from Ohio. He went to Ohio State. We both loved and raced motorcycles. So, and I mean, look at this. You know, who's working here, really? It's just, we were having a blast. I went over to his house, and he's really modeling for the Bigfoot character here. And it was a given that he would be Bigfoot guy, you know? Because he's a big guy with a Bigfoot. And he's still like that. You know, you call him, and it's a lot of laughter and stuff like that. So these drawings are really for the model maker. These are the results. But I don't know if Jerry Pinsler did those or not. I can't remember the name of the guy who did that, but he doesn't call it. That's why everybody calls him Paul Ahead because of that. He still has it, I think. Next one. Dennis would, actually, I don't know if he did this for all his games, but he was basically an industrial designer. He went to Ohio State. He was really educated, and so he'd make mock-ups like this quite often. And thanks to Jim Shelburne. Where are you, Jim? Are you in here? I thought I saw him a minute ago. He's probably getting ready for this. But he shot this for me and sent it to me. And both Dennis and I. Next slide, please. That's a lot of work going into that. This is an early rough for Whitewater, just for the back glass. A lot of things change. Next sketch, or next slide, which is a sketch. This is a tight sketch. I've worked out all the characters, which I'm going to show the photo reference for you in a minute. And Dennis had a Bible of gags he wanted in this game, really about, I'd say, half a dozen pages of just things, you know, like I want Bigfoot turning to raft, I want this, I want a character that's like a bird watcher, blah, blah, blah.
We go back and forth on that. He did history on the Colorado River, Grand Canyon, and such. He had the character of the Wet William. These characters are very rich and fun, and really fun to work on. Next one, please. You're not going to get to do something like that working for United Airlines. You're going to do like a Hawaiian shirt on a billboard or something. This is the final artwork. A few things have changed. Bigfoot moved over to the right. Next slide. We're going to move along quick here. This is really the photo reference. This is how it's done. I hide them in there. And you got to be willing to make an ass out of yourself. You know? It's good times. I remember my kid Charlie. I think I was talking to Shannon earlier. He's back there. He'd do everything I did. You know, so it didn't matter. I could be doing a Marlboro thing or whatever. You know, he'd be back there smoking a fake cigarette. You know. Next slide, please. This is the color comp that would be given to Margaret. And I photographed it on the floor of my studio because I need a reference for it later on for doing plastics and such. These are the screen colors over here. So these, each one of these, the screen would be cut for them. And the little dots over here are combinations of two colors. I was really influenced by Python and some other people that came before me, Mark Springer, who would really make their play fields look dimensional. You're looking down at a piece of plywood, but it's kind of like M.C. Escher or some of those artists. You want perspective to lose that flat look to it. And I really wanted to do that with that Colorado River thing. And it was hard to do, but I like the way it turned out. I have really good feelings and memories about that game. Next slide, please. Twilight Zone. And Pat Lawler, this is what he would look like. You know, he'd call me in, you know, slow close the door, and you know, what do you think about Twilight Zone? We might be able to get Twilight Zone. And I about wet my pants, you know, Twilight Zone. And I really felt like, this is true, I really felt like everything I'd done in my life previous to this, both personal and as an artist, was just to prepare myself to do Twilight Zone. So I have really immersed myself in that game and romance doing the artwork, just stretched out as long as I could. And it was a labor of love, but you can see what's happening down here. Those are the new inserts. That's another game. No, that's my light. You can see the gumball machine back there. Pat's office was, this is not a good representation because almost, if you've been in an office at the old Williams, and even at Stern, it's total chaos. You know, you go in there, and if you want to write something on a paper, you got to like push, you know, all these parts aside and such, you know. And Pat was no different. He actually had a couch in his studio, but that was always full of crap too. So he pulled me into his studio or into his office, you know. Next slide, please. And we'd start talking about the game, you know. And with this game, I was working on Whitewater, and he said, "We can get this. Roger says we can get this, but we need to get an okay from Carol Serling before we can do it. So we need to know right now. You need to send her something to what a backlash might look like." And Pat had the idea of a curio shop, and I immediately thought of this Norman Rockwell illustration. I wanted to show the curio shop from the outside looking in, just like this. And I started drawing it. Next slide, please. And probably a, okay. Well, we'll come back to it. This is just reference. The buzz sheet on the left, I read this book here like a couple times over. It's all beat up on it too. Had a couple pages of my hit list over here. I still do that for all my slot games I work on now. I make tons of things like that. Next slide, please. This is what we sent Carol Serling, this drawing right here. And you know, for a rough drawing that's thrown together in a few days, I can't believe I put all that stuff in it. But it's, you know, it's Twilight Zone. There's no shortage of ideas, you know, there's millions of them. So it's like not what to put in, it's like what not to put in. And it came back, and she only had one comment. It was really sweet, too. Just get rid of a cigarette, you know. He had died of lung cancer, so that was it. And I think she sensed we really wanted to do something nice. Next, and you can see all the notes here. These are just notes for the team. You know, I'd be in there, and I'd write the things down, you know. Next slide. This is the tight sketch. I was telling you, Shannon, earlier that you can tell I just really, for a sketch, I really did a number on it. And it's behind my computer where I work. I work on like four computers now, but my main one that I paint on, because it's all digital now, but on the wall back there, I have this sketch just sitting there to remind me, you know, what it's all about. A lot of things in here from the game that were specifically requested. There's some tributes to different people here that I'll talk about. Maybe I'll talk about it at the other time, but just a lot of fun. Next slide, please. Final artwork, there's a tribute to Larry DeMar having put tributes to his dad. And there's a lot of little gags in here, little personal things to Carol Serling's family that she requested, or to Rod's family, I should say. There's a tribute here to my family doctor, who was a slot machine addict. He worked on the first heart transplant in Houston with the Bakey, and he's a slot machine geek. So, go figure. So I put his name on there, Arthur Stevenson, slot company. My son Charlie, which we're going to see in a minute. Next slide, please. You can also see the viewpoint. I moved it inside the curio shop, got rid of the whole window paint, and I just was too busy. Had to work off of the TV because there were no digital files, no Google to find anything's on. The style guide had practically nothing from Viacom. So I just sat there at a TV with my camera and shot over and over again until I got good shots. And that was the best. Actually, I had a videotape and I had to advance them, you know, one step at a time. And he talked with his teeth clenched. It was really hard to catch. Next slide, please. This is just reference. I got to do a dummy. Who am I going to use? You know, first I just faked it. And then I thought, I got a dummy. Charlie. And he was always willing to put anything on to do anything. So I had to calm him down. You know, just act like a dummy. Next slide, please. And by the way, I forgot to mention, could you please go back? The whole button thing, that's a path thing going all the way back to my first game with him, Whirlwind. And you really have to ask him about the button. It's like a kind of mysterious thing, you know. We just put it in there, but it's to really get people thinking about what's happening. Does he have control over this, you know, or what's going on? And, you know, it's amazing. It's a licensed game, and here we are doing things like that. Nowadays, with a licensed client, you'll see later if I ever get my button gear here, the kind of things that can happen. Next slide, please. More modeling stuff. Started out with this perspective. And I thought of a Chris Van Allsburg book, which you saw earlier. He wrote Polar Express and illustrated it. He did these goofy perspectives. So I borrowed that from him. It's really a bug's eye view. And that's what kind of gives that back glass, that eerie look. Next sketch, please. Or next slide. These are all sketches. The Whitewood for Twilight Zone and the final product over here. These are the shots I take in there when I go, and I just hold the camera up as high as I could. I still do that. And shoot as many shots as I can get. Become ball machine. Things would often get yanked. Like we'd start with a lot of stuff in a game, and the old budget beast would come along, you know, and bye-bye. So I was very pleased when things survived, like the gumball machine or a clock or whatever. You know, we tried to put a clock in a game forever, way back in Funhouse. But the budgets got rid of it, so we did it with inserts. Next slide, please. Real quick, they were going to, this game was going to be on the Today Show or something like that, and it was going to be given away as a prize. But we didn't have a game, you know, the game wasn't built yet. So nowadays, it'd be, you know, you just take all your Photoshop files, you skew them or whatever, and you do it in like an hour. I had to paint it, that's a painting of the game. And I look at it now and I go, my God, I painted that? Next slide. I've been dumbed down by the computer. just the process of cabinet artwork, blue sky thinking, where anything goes. Still do that with slots to this day. Rejected concept. I really like this idea of playful type. Came in with this. I don't know if Pat had the idea of moving the bulldozer over there or what, but you know, I think he had the idea of lowering the R. I'm not sure. That was accepted. Accepted back glass. Accepted. Cabin front. Next slide, please. Are you getting the process here of just, you don't want to waste a lot of time going down the wrong path, so you try to start rough and then work your way to a finished product, and that way, when you get that final painting done, there's very, very rarely is there a change. This is the mechanical drawing that I would be faced with at the beginning, and if they have ramps on them and everything, that's what gave me the headache, really. And this is the white one, so I'd have this, and I'd have this, and I'd start drawing. And it didn't go from this to this to that. That's like 3 weeks later or something. There'd be rough drawings and changing things out, which you'll see later on Ripley's. Next slide, please. That's just a tight sketch from the playfield. that would be given to Kevin O'Connor for inking. Next slide. That's a rough of the back glass. Again, doing a rough version. We don't want to get in too far. And have changes. Pat added, or I went in there and we were talking, and Pat had a new red Corvette, you know. So he came over to my house, and again, let's put more stuff in the back glass. I need more stuff, you know. So he came over and I photographed him. I don't have that here, but he's in the final artwork. We got Carlene Carter to do some songs for the game. And my son was in drama class, so one of his classmates came over to model for me. And as the drawing got sexier and sexier, I just thought, I'm in trouble. Next slide, please. That's the tight sketch. Just getting tighter. Pat's kind of worked out a little bit more. And this back glass has really got a lot going on in it. Next one, please. Final artwork. There's a roadshow down there, is there? Isn't it? Yeah. I'm going to keep moving on here because I got a lot of ground to cover in a few minutes. This is developing the head, just like on Rudy. I started with a mechanical drawing for crutch. Do sketches that would fit under the glass. That's what these are. Hand those to the model maker, he's the sculptor, toy maker, whatever. Dave Link is the guy I was trying to think of. I think by now Jerry Pensler passed away. Unfortunately, we lost him. He's really a great guy. And so that would have been Dave Link probably. And then I would get like a plastic shell that I would paint. And someone in New York or the Bronx or whatever would paint the heads. I don't remember. Next slide, please. One of my favorite back glasses to paint. I mean, look at it. You know, it's just, I loved it. Python had done Pinbot, the character, so I had that. Larry DeMar came up with the idea of, I think it was Larry came up with the idea of Jackbot, but if you look at the credits, I was looking at them this morning, or yesterday, and there's a lot of names on there because it was kind of like a dog pile thing. Everybody pitched in. I think Doug Watson did the play field. I did the back glass in the cabinet. But these hands, the Python did, my God, look at them. These are the Pinbot hands, and I had to paint them, and they had to be true. It looked like they would work, you know. There was a labor of love there doing that, too. Next one, please. That was the sketch. I'll kind of show you the final artwork first, just to get you into it, you know. But, the sketch isn't really that tight. I guess it was probably pressed for time. Next one, please. This is like inspiration, you know. You're just constantly thinking, you know, driving in the car, or, you know, you wake up at night, you get ideas. But it's really true. I love he said, like, World War II nose art. I love it. And, of course, I remember seeing this in one of all the World War II movies. And so when it came time to do the back glass, and really, for the back box, and, you know, you're in charge. You can do whatever you want as long as they accept it. So I turned her into this. You can see how the anatomy changed. I think she looks just fine. But I had to, you know, give her that look. And it survived. This I'd seen on everywhere. It's kind of like American Gothic. That's a theme that's been used over and over again. But it works great here. You know, they're kind of alone. Next slide, please. Johnny Mnemonic, the George Gomez game that I just don't have the time to talk about. But has George been down here? No? He's a designer and an artist unto himself, so I would bring the play fields in and such, and he'd redraw them or, you know, create a look. And says, I want that look, you know. So I had fun working with them. I just don't have time to go into that. Safecracker, same way. I was going to say it was a mini game. And by now, pinball was starting to, it had peaked, and it's coming down, and the feeling was different. We're still giving it our all, you know, but it's a different feeling. Next slide, please. I can talk forever on this game, but I don't have forever. So let me just say this. It was Greg Ferris's game. He was going to do everything, but Greg was the art director. He ran the art department, and he got bogged down. And so he called me in to do the back glass in the cabinet, side cabinet on this. But he had it. Let's go to the next slide for a minute. Greg gave me this. I went in there for a meeting, and I mean, man, it was rough. Because you could tell, Yelsey, we want your A game. We don't want that glow crap you put on stuff. You know, none of that. We'll have none of that, you know. And they were serious, you know. Myself into. But it really turned out to be all fun. Greg had it all worked out. The whole castle perspective thing, which really strong architecture foundation to work on. He also had a king figure in here on overlay. They gave me a big hit list of things they wanted in the game. Brian Eddy was there.
And by the way, I hadn't worked with Brian Eddy until, I'm not kidding, he was like a snot-nosed kid, looked like about 19 on Funhouse. And I hadn't worked with him since then, and now he really knew what he was doing, you know, as we all know. He's a great team leader and designer. So anyway, the thing about this for me was peer pressure. I really had to give it my best, because otherwise I'd be, made fun of. next slide, please. Well, anyway, this is research leading up to it. Again, my kids and Andy, who would have been the king normally, he just had his jaw was wired shut. He had surgery a few days ago, so I made him a troll and got the leading man from the play. Kurt Marson, by the way, is in movies and stuff in Hollywood right now. He's in TV series and stuff, so he was the king. But that's him there. And you can see it's getting more kingly as we go. And this is all my stuff. Nobody else saw this, you know, but it's just me getting that look over there. And that's not a really good shot, but next slide, please. The trolls, that's how it goes, you know, little Charlie, you know, comes this guy, Andy, who's like in, on Vicodin and crap, you know. Becomes this guy and that guy. Notice how Charlie's back there empty. I don't know if he is or not. Maybe. Next one, please. Who's the inspiration for that? Shannon, you can't talk on that one. Anybody?
Your wife?
No? Of course, she would love that, or he just, you know. Next slide. There you go. I mean, you can do anything you want, right? You know, as long as the team approves it, you know, so they like that. Next slide, please. And Greg had this all worked out too. He had the design, the architecture. I just had to paint it, and I love that artwork. I have all the artwork, you know, but that's one of my best cabinets. And I can talk about cabinet design too. I'm just gonna tell you that everybody kept one upsmanship going on, you know, all the way from like when I, you know, think of the original stencil cabinets. They just kept getting better, 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 better. We didn't get paid anymore. It was just like, oh God, did you see what he did, you know? And then plus now you can do more than silk screening them too. Next slide, please. I'm just trying to cram as much in. No good gophers. You already saw that. We talked about it. I originally did this, and Pat had a good call on it. He says, no, the gopher is the star here. You know, I'll push the golfer into the back. There you can see my, I love that golfer. So we moved the gopher in front, put the golfer there, and that's this slide that I reference for it. Next slide, please. I don't have a shot of it because it's the only screen glass I did. It's actually screened on a piece of glass. So I don't have a good shot of it. Again, well, you'll see in the next one. Go ahead. No good gophers. This is the last game I worked on at Williams. And I knew it was most likely going to be the last game. Well, last traditional game. Just models for us. An entirely different team on this one. It was kind of cobbled together. But let's see. We had Matt Coriel, I'm trying to remember now, Tom Capera, Tom Uban, Adam Ryan. And I'll tell you, there was great chemistry in that game. And I loved that game. And I loved working on that game. And everybody just, that whole team thing we were talking about, not wanting to let the other guy down. And no one was paying attention to us. It was all about Pinball 2000 and what was to become Star Wars. They called it the Big Kahuna. And I didn't even know about it. I was locked out of the whole art department. So we were like shoved off into this corner, you know. And but we were determined to do a good game. And we all loved that game. They didn't make enough of it. Next one, please. The back glass. We got to move. Keep going. What do you mean? We're getting there. I love that cat or that cabinet artwork, too. It's one of my favorites. Again, you can do anything you want with the cabinets now because you can do regular screen, four-color screening. Next one, please. Time for Stern. Poor Stern's going to get the quick run-through. It's just, I talk too much on that stuff. Those early days at Williams, it was just really cool being in there, being in the factory. It was an old factory in Chicago on California. Those of you who were there and knew it, it wasn't like a high-tech place. It was old. The factory had a wooden floor, and I don't mean wood floor like hardwood now. I think it was 2x4s on end. So it was all 2x4 like rectangles, like very pretty, about that thick. And I always thought it was because of the whole electronic thing. So before that, it had been a, I think it had been like a telephone company, or I don't know. But that's why I was told, was what I was told something else by Shelburne. That it was, they wanted, Neil wanted it easier on the employees. But I don't think that's true at all. Let's see, some other things to talk about. The whole team competitive thing there at Williams, it was kind of, I saw it as good and bad. And it was, everybody was very secretive about their projects. And there was a lot of whispering, and you weren't told what other people were working on. And I thought it would be a better idea, the way we do it at IGT where I'm at now, and it's run by Joe Kamikov, a pinball guy who's really a great leader. Well, we're broke in the teams too, but we all come together. You know, everybody can comment, and you just get more voices involved. It's still competitive, you know, but you can get feedback from anybody or ask anybody anything. Okay, Stern. I'm not going to go into the whole change because you guys, just other people can talk about that. You know, I was just there the last day when it all went down. I was in there for something else, and it crashed, and Pat was on the way into work. He didn't even know. I called him on the cell phone and told him, and I knew it was coming, but it was because Pat had prepared it, but it was really a sad day. Really sad. Shook us up. Sharky Shootout, I'm surprised when Dwight Sullivan, who had worked at Williams, called me. As a matter of fact, on that last day, I remember we were going through the dumpsters and stuff, and Dwight was telling me he might have a gig at Stern, so I was very pleased when he called me and asked me to do this game. Next one, please. And by the way, it's the only airbrush playfield. That playfield is completely airbrushed. With a few other things over the top of it. It's the only one I did like that. Monopoly, really surprised when I got a call from Pat. And he said he was going to work with Gary to do a game and kind of get the team back together again as much as he could. And I was really pleased and excited to hear that. He had a company out near where I live, PLD in Harvard, Illinois. So we meet out there and go to the bar and talk just like we did at Gaffer Dams. It was really sweet. We pitched Monopoly at Williams. I actually went to Milton Bradley like about 5 years, or probably about 8 years before this. And they couldn't get together legally somehow, so we never did it. So it was nice to do it. It's a natural game to do any kind of a game on. And WMS has got a great series of video slots, mechanical slots, using this theme. Next slide, please. The playfield. You guys can ask questions if there's any time. Not now, but when I'm done. So let's just keep rolling. I'll try to cram as many of you, all of them, as possible. Next slide, please. Roller Coaster Tycoon. This is the last airbrushed, actually last airbrushed backlash I did. The rest of it were digital after this. And I knew it was going to be the last. I kind of, I had fun with it again, played with perspective. It was a great license to work with. All these games now are Pat Lawler games that you're going to see. That's all I worked with. I had a job at IGT. I only wanted to do one game a year. Next slide, please. By the way, it took 6 months to do a game. Just keep that in mind from start to finish. It was a lot of work. Colors, color comp sketch for approval. Everything had to be sent to these guys in the UK. Next slide, please. Final artwork. You've all seen it. Next slide, please. Can I get this on? There's the right for a tight sketch. That would be sent to Kevin for inking. The color comp, we've already talked about that. And the final screening. Now, it's so digital and everything. And I get to see things ahead of time. Everything's emailed to me. It's FTP site, so it's great. Next slide, please. This really shows the process all in one slide. The whitewood reject, kind of like two sketches. You can see they change up here. Little changes that are happening. Packed like this ring down here. We beefed it up in the heart of the play field in the back. We added some arrows to guide the player, help them understand the game. Color comp, and then I think that's his final artwork over there. Next slide, please. This is just a detail. That heart of the playfield, that's what I call it. I don't know that anybody else calls it that. But to me, that's what I tackle first, and that's what's going to lead the player into the game, and there's a lot of problem solving to be done there. So you want to get the best out of it you can. I really care about that a lot, a whole lot. So if it's not right, I can't sleep at night. So I drew this, and I liked it. So we went with it. Everybody liked it, with a few changes.
Next one, please. I was going to talk about this for about an hour, but we'll just look at it. We've already talked kind of. Really, this is a thumbnail sketch. I don't know if you've really seen thumbnails yet, but I do a lot of these before I move on, just because you don't want to waste time going down the wrong path. So I wanted to have, I looked at Research Ripley's, and, you know, there's a lot of their museums have airplanes crashed into them, or they look like an upside-down building, and I wanted to do something quirky like that. So I had a big pinball crashed in the middle of this whole museum right there, and I did that on this comp. Pat did not like that, and by the time, well, I shouldn't say he didn't like it, but he was looking at it, you know, rubbing his chin, and he said, you know, we got a shrunken head in the game. He said, put the shrunken head there. And so Greg Ferris to this day always gives me a hard time about the giant shrunken head in the front of the game. I used perspective there to do that. This female character here, based around Dale Arden from the old Buck Rogers series from the 30s. And I hated the shrunken head here. Couldn't sleep, so I got up and drew that shrunken head, which is what's on the back glass. So same thing, this guy evolves from that to that to that. Next slide, please. NASCAR. Matt Lawler loves racing. He loves NASCAR. He raced himself. Not in NASCAR, but in, well, I can't remember, you know, kind of like a midget car kind of racing thing. So this was his baby, and there were a lot of changes because I didn't grasp it totally, you know, little inside things. And NASCAR, by the way, really protected their license. We wanted lots of fire and sparks and stuff. No, can't do that. All, licensing nightmare, all this stuff. Next slide, please. I bought model cars and photographed them for perspective and such. This is what I was telling you earlier. I get that mechanical drawing and simplify it in my brain. I eliminate everything and just highlight shooting lanes. Now I can think about it, you know, what's going here. No matter what I put in here, I have to preserve these lanes so the eye takes you in there. Tight sketch, kind of a detailed sketch. You're drawing this thing and suddenly you realize you have a big blank area in the play field, you know. So you just start drawing and having fun, and that's one of those places right there. I can't really see from this angle. That's probably a color comp. And that's probably the final artwork. There's no screen cutting now. It's all painted digitally. Margaret Hudson comes in. She would trap, if any of you know about the mechanics of doing the playfield, all of these holes have to be trapped with a black line. That's traditional pinball, going back to the screen days. And then we do the artwork around that. So Margaret does that before I ever start. Then I'll paint all this in Photoshop. I have a Cintiq, so I'm painting like just like on an easel, like this, on a pressure-sensitive display. Some of you know about it probably. And it's just like painting almost. Almost. It's not as dirty, which I really miss. I miss all the dirt from painting. Next one, please. Dale Jr., this is what we pitched to Dale. This is like a clone of NASCAR. Next slide, and I'm only going to show this next one for a second because back glass comps, I'm not kidding, that many were submitted. And I had written down 55, it's not quite 55. And I had some really cool things in there. I wanted it to be edgy and stuff. You know, his website was so cool. But that was when Dale Jr. was kind of going through the breakup with whatever the name of his company was, DEI, I think it was. And so it was really hard to get approvals. And we ended up with that, you know, which is my opinion is I don't like it. Next one, please. I had a blast with Shrek. A licensed game where actually things worked. They sent us, they had a great style guide with beautiful 3D artwork, which worked great for the back glass and the cabinet. And really, as an artist, I'm just taking those images and designing them. It's not like the old days at all. So you grab the style guide and do stuff. Very little painting involved. Next one, please. The play field evolving, and I didn't like it. It was just, the style guide, one bad thing about it was, it's like for places like Burger King or Toys R Us, you know. And we called them, and by the way, I work with Mark Schoenberg at Stern. He's kind of like the art director, everything there. He's really great. And so Mark and I actually called them out there, and we just explained to them, I actually prepared a file to send to them, showing them all the artwork on the pinball machine, the play field, the plastics, the cabinet. And I said, we need more stuff. We need to put cool stuff in here. You just can't have things like on a Happy Meal. And So on this last one, I kind of took a leap. Could you jump to the next one, which is the final artwork? And I took a leap. I just started illustrating stone around here. I love doing stuff like that. I created a leather thing in here, you know, because Shrek wears leather and stuff like that, you know. And it was a real leap because I invested a lot of time in it, and I just did final artwork. They said, we just want to see final now. And this was different than what they had said. And I was shocked when they loved it, you know. But it really worked out great. Next one, please. CSI. Fun game to work on, good licensing, but unfortunately, we were working on it when they were changing lead stars. William Peterson and Lawrence Fishburne. And a couple of characters were going to change, but they didn't know yet. They knew it was going to happen, but they didn't know what. So at one point, we were going to have no stars in here, which is why the cabinet looks like it does now, by the way. Which is nice. I like the way it turned out. It's just a little behind-the-scenes story. Next slide, please. There was a lot of jockeying for position with this back glass, because William Peterson might be going away, so in some of them, he's like kind of in the back, you know. Yeah, I don't even think he's in that one, you know, in case he was gone completely. Next slide, please. The cabinet, I darkened it because legally you're not supposed to see this stuff. But, you know, some rejected versions, and then no star? What, no star? Okay, I'll just make up a little science project. It's all about science anyway. And I love the cabinet, by the way. I wish I actually had one. Next slide, please. Playfield, I like that a lot. I have fun doing it. Try to lead you in there with inserts and arrows and such. There's a lot going on there. Next slide, please. Those are playfield roughs kind of evolving for the final product. Just to show you that just nowadays with digital stuff, it's easy to change things so they get changed over and over and over again, and it's easy to send people 10 versions. So that's what you end up doing, like that Dale Jr. thing, you know, all those comps we went through. Next slide, please. A big buck hunter, which I've been waiting for this game to come through for a long time. It was originally Dennis Nordman's game, and when the whole shakeup at Stern occurred, I thought the company was going bye-bye, but I'm really glad that they survived. But anyway, so many people left, including Dennis, which sickened me, really saddened me. But John Borg ended up designing. He's a good designer, and I like working with him. He's easy to work with. So I'm happy with the game. The way it turned out, because I had 1 month to do it, that was it, 30 days. Now we're talking, you know, 6 months to do a game. Now they needed it in 30 days. Like Gary Stern says, we have to be building this game. And it was over the holidays, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know. So right away I handed the whole playfield over to Kevin O'Connor, because I knew I could dump it on, just dump it for Kevin to do it, you know. And I art directed it, but he doesn't need a lot of art direction. I had done the video game. Video game cabinet and marquee artwork for the whole series of Big Buck Hunter. So I was really just borrowing that artwork. They wanted to keep the appearance of the license. Next one, please. I'm working with old pinball people here at Play Mechanics did the video game. It's George Petro and then Eugene Jarvis at Raw Thrills with two people who had to get approvals from over here, Play Mechanics and Raw Thrills. I did the Cruisin' series with Eugene and Mr. Midway. You know, if you have any questions about this, we can talk about it later, but I'm running out of time, so next slide, please. My son, Charlie, Rudy, this is what he does. One of the things he does, he helps me with plastics and decals. So he did a lot of that for the last three games now. I do the painting, and he does a lot of the design work. Next one, please. Same thing there with decals. I just wanted to show those because they're nowhere else. So there'll be more games, you know. That's one good thing, you know. I still get to do pinball, and I'm glad I'm still in it. And it really has been a great ride for me, both as a person and as an artist. And I still have a lot of pinball friends. I run into them all over the place. They're great people. You guys know me, probably. You know, people in the industry, though, are great people. So. That's my story. Questions? Yes?
What happened in the 70s in pinball?
What happened to what?
In the 70s in pinball.
To me? Okay. Well, I was just getting started as a freelance artist, and my roommate, Ken,
worked at Valley, my old roommate from art school. By now I was married and everything. And I was just kind of a new freelance guy, and I got called in to work on Old Chicago. I was going to do the game, and I knew about Dave Christensen, and I respected him a great deal. I kind of stood in his shadow, really. So I did the game, and I think I failed on the game. And Dave basically re-inked my artwork or scratched it and stuff, but it is my design. And I ended up losing money. Not losing, but I got paid very little. And so I thought, man, that was a bad experience. And that's why I didn't want anything to do with pinball. I knew I couldn't do what Dave did, really. It wasn't until the technology changed, which came around. I improved. I became more professional and more proficient at that kind of, so I could do a game. Question?
How about Iron Man? Talk about Iron Man.
Iron Man? I didn't do Iron Man.
Oh, you didn't?
No. No, I think Kevin's did that, or I don't even know if he's doing that. I'm out of the loop on that one. Sorry.
Is there ever a version of Whitewater where you have the actual title of the game in the back class?
In the back class?
Well, yeah, that's like in the title. In the back class.
Where is the title? Refresh my memory. It's not up on the top. Yeah, okay. There probably was at the beginning. That was one of those things where we might lose it, So I can't really recall. I called Dennis Nordman, before I came down here to refresh my memory. He said, John, I don't remember anything. He said, thanks, Dennis. But these games happen so fast. You finished it, and you don't have time to look at it, play it, nothing, because you're going to the next one. So there probably was a version of the title on it until they said, yeah, you have enough money to do that thing on top. And then it went bye-bye. Yeah, Whitewater, it's in the rocks and everything up there. Next question. I'm pretty sure, 90% sure there was one.
It looked real similar to the clock.
Right, and I think that's the same clock. I was going to put that in there when I talked, but I couldn't remember for certain. But I do remember when Pat came up with the idea of putting the clock in the inserts because we ran out of money. It was no big deal, I like the way it turned out. Once you play the game, it's kind of intuitive. You get used to it. Question? You first, and then you.
Okay. Could you talk a little bit about the freelance illustrations that you mentioned?
About what?
Freelance illustrations that you mentioned before.
I went to school. I was really bad at everything else, quite frankly. When I was a kid, I went to a Catholic school with no art, so I went and learned how to paint from little old ladies. I'm not kidding. That's how I learned how to paint. And, I was not accepted at one college, not one. So I was going to go to Vietnam, really, but they couldn't draft me because I was missing my trigger finger. So I ended up at art school. And about my junior year, I got real serious and majored in illustration. And I wanted to do album covers. I decided that's what I wanted to do. And that got me into freelance illustration, really, was I did a senior thesis on illustrating music theories. And that led me into the freelance thing, after about 5 years of doing it. But you can't just start freelancing. You have to have a career first doing something else, and then you build it working at night, quite frankly. That's how you build it until ultimately I was making more money freelancing than my job. So then I knew I can freelance. I can quit my job, and it was great because I didn't have to drive to Chicago. I could just live on the boonies. But I had a rep in Chicago, one in New York, and those guys go out and get you work and feed you work. So I was very busy, just working day and night, day and night, day and night, and plus the pinball stuff. It was really hard. Anything in particular about that?
That's good.
Okay, I'm sorry, John.
Yeah, the CSI game, is there any non-characterized artwork or backlash that you did?
No, there were threats of that, but I don't think we ever did any. If we did, it would have just been a logo, what we ended up on the cabin.
I was always trying to find whether somebody could have a Vegas thing, get rid of the characters, and just have a Vegas thing.
Yeah, we had a license that we had to use from them, and a lot of it was technical stuff that just was not attractive to you. You know, the back glass has to draw the player in. That's what they say. They say it about slots, not to about any kind of coin on. The artwork has to draw the player to the game. And then if the game was good, they'll keep playing it over and over again. But if the game is bad, the artwork's going to do nothing for you. You know, it's just, it won't keep you coming back to it. So it has to draw you in. And that stuff just wasn't attractive enough for me. So fortunately, we got the characters, you know. It went on for a long time. Just no one could make a decision, you know, on what to do. So I was in limbo for like 3 months. I worked on everything else. By the way, the order of work on a game is you always start on a cabinet first because you need a logo. At least back in the old days, you had to develop a logo. The cabinet was safe, you know. You know, you might not be able to work on anything else, but you do the cabinet first. Then you move on to the play field, because that's really labor intensive with the old screening process even now, so you got to get that play field done. Then plastics, decals, and the last thing is the back glass, because quite frankly, you can finish a back glass digital painting and have it in the game like in hours. You know, it's really nice. It's easier, much easier than the old days. A lot easier. Yes?
Back when you did Gophers, that's a painted back glass that's different from everything else. Were you involved in that decision process, and why was it decided to do that?
That was Pat's thing. Pat likes traditional pinball. And to me, it was, I didn't mind doing it, but it's not really how I'm not prepared to do that. It's not brought up working out there. Line art and stuff, but I had fun doing it, you know, once that decision was made. And it's, the artwork was done just with line artwork, and then I called out the colors, Margaret cut the screens, and that's why I have 10 screen back glasses down in my basement. Actually, I have 9, I sold one. Next question. Yeah, I answered everything. Yes.
You're probably best known for your cartoon style artwork. Do you prefer that to the more photorealistic style of like CSI?
I don't think of myself as a cartoonist, but don't forget CSI is photographic. It's all, it's kind of a style guide with photos. That's why that's so real. Mm. I do work a lot more real now that I'm digital. You can really get in there and tighten things up. But, I don't know, I guess I just do that automatically. You know? My freelance work, if I didn't mention some of the things that you asked about yet, but let me just mention. Some of that gets realistic, like, it's not pinball, but it's like Yoplait yogurt, a lot of McDonald's stuff, Skippy peanut butter, a lot of United Airlines billboard. I do all the Naked Juice bottles, labels, you know. It's a lot of Sunkist stuff. I did the Hardy Boys series. You know, a lot of that stuff's realistic. But, you know, the nice thing about, if I just start drawing, you know, it's going to end up funny looking. You know, I go to a drawing class, not a class, a group of artists once a week, drawing a model. And I draw real there, you know, it's like trying to draw like old school, you know. But when I illustrate, it just kind of goes that way, you know. That's the way it is. Anything else?
John's going to do signatures for autographs and stuff.
Okay.
We'll set him up at the top up here if you think you'd like an autograph. I think he has some things.
I do have some things. I got pens. And if you're interested, I printed up like just 2 collections of these are the Williams Bally years. Actually, I think those are both the same. This is collection number 2, but there's a collection 1 and 2. $15 each. You can get both for $25. Just for my retirement.